Whenever Elijah spoke, he used elaborate gestures. It was as if he wanted his already long hands to extend toward whomever he was talking to. He and Juma were friends. They walked next to each other. Juma was always nodding his head, agreeing to whatever the lanky Elijah said to him as we walked. Juma used his head to gesture rather than his hands. Whenever he spoke, he waved his head left to right. He left his hands crossed behind his back most of the time, like an old man. Saido and Moriba were almost as quiet as I. They always sat next to each other, away from the group. Saido breathed hard as we walked. His ears were large, and when he was listening, they stood up like a deer's. Moriba always told him that he must have extra hearing ability. Moriba mostly played with his hands, examining the lines on his palm and rubbing his fingers as he whispered to himself. I barely spoke. I knew Elijah, Kene, and Musa from my former secondary school. We never talked much about our past, especially our families. The few conversations we had that weren't related to our journey were mostly about soccer and school before we resumed our silence. The pains we felt from our feet subsided on the fourth night. We went for a walk around the hut, and during our stroll, I found out that the hut was only about half a mile from the main village. At night, we could see smoke rising from the tiny village's cooking huts. We stayed in the hut for a week. Our host brought us water and food every morning and night. He had the whitest teeth that I had ever seen, and he was shirtless all the time. Sometimes when he came to check on us in the morning, he had chewing sap in his mouth. I asked him one morning for his name. He laughed softly. "It is not necessary. This way we will all be safe." The following night, our host decided to take us to a part of the Atlantic Ocean that was nearby. As we walked, he engaged us in conversation. We learned that he was Shabro, one of the many tribes in Sierra Leone. When he heard the stories of how we had walked from Matrujong, he couldn't believe us. He said he had heard about the war, but still had difficulty believing that people could do the things that he had heard they did. Our host had been born in the main village and never left. Traders came to his village with clothing items, rice, and other cooking ingredients to exchange for salt and fish, so he didn't need to go anywhere. If I had to guess, I would say he was in his early 20s. He said he was going to get married the next month and was looking forward to it. I asked why his hut was removed from the village. He explained that it was his fishing hut, where he kept his nets and other fishing items, and where he dried fish during the rainy season. When we got to the ocean, we walked to an inlet where the sea wasn't rough. We sat on the banks. "Put your foot na di wata, make the salt water sukam." He also said that the salt water was good for healing the pain and preventing tetanus. Our host sat aside, looking at us, and each time I looked at him, he was smiling and his white teeth stood out against his dark face. The dry breeze from inland coupled with the cool ocean air was perfectly soothing. I wanted to know his name so badly, but I restrained myself. "You boys must come here every night to put your feet in the ocean. This way you'll be healed in less than a week," he said. He looked in the sky, where the stars were beginning to be covered by fast-moving clouds. "I have to go take care of my canoe. It will rain soon, so you must go back to the hut." He started running in the sand toward the main village. "I wish I could be that man. He's just so happy and content with his life," Elijah said. "He's a very nice man too. I really want to know his name," Kene said softly. "Yes, yes." We all agreed with Kene and went wandering into our own thoughts, which were interrupted by a sudden burst of rain. We hadn't listened to our host and left when he had told us to. We hastened to the hut. There, we sat around the fire to dry ourselves and eat dried fish.